Okay, I'm Eleanor Levine, and I am welcoming Rafi Kosower to be interviewed. Rafi came to our neighborhood many, many years ago, and he'll talk about that. Rafi, I just want to explain to you that I'm on the board of Harvard Village Residents Association, and this is our project, our history project. And we want to learn people's stories, people who moved into the neighborhood many years ago.
What are you going to do with them?
What am I going to do with them?
With these people and their histories?
We're going to collect them. We thought we'd do a book. We're probably not going to do a book. We'll put it onto our website and just enrich our neighborhood by knowing the history.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, Rafi, I'm going to ask you some questions, and you can just take off. Okay. When did you... I want to know when you...
I'm a short distance flyer. Like, I never put a lot of gas into it. I can take off from there, but if you want me to keep going, you're going to have to continually feed me benzene of some sort. Okay.
My pleasure. I'll feed you. Okay. So, Rafi, how old were you, and what year did you move into the neighborhood of Harvard Village?
Dates are not good at, so I'm going to do it the way I have to do it, which is to go back in terms of where I was, what was happening at that time. It would have been exactly we moved into the bakery before we moved in, 100% with our baggage and our few sticks of furniture. So it would be exactly 1945 that we took possession of the bakery itself. That means the lock, stock, and barrel of the business called Harvard Bakery. And above Harvard Bakery was a very, very smart apartment, completely redone in late 40s style of tiles and really quite tasteful. I know places now that would give their right arm for the for a shop that had the kind of washroom that they had upstairs. Anyway, that's another story. So 1945 is that event, and I think 1948 would be when we actually moved into the apartment.
Right above the store.
Above the store, yeah.
And who was in the house? How many generations? Who was there?
Of us?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there would be the two generations, my parents and the three kids. Mm-hmm. 1948 with Susie Bierman. 1936. 1949, Susie would not have been around until 49. So I'd have to say, that looks like a good thing. I'd have to say 49 rather than 48. 48, did I say? 48.
And you stayed in the neighborhood for how many years, living in the neighborhood?
Well, my parents stayed in the neighborhood and above the store until my father no longer could negotiate the steep steps that led upstairs to the apartment. I'm going to reserve that. I'm going to have to check with Susie or Roz. She'd be better at that exact date. I would say, don't worry about it. Leave that with me.
Yeah, okay. What I'd like to move on to then is, you're still working in the neighborhood, and so we're talking about 1945, 1948, and this is 2012. So although you're not living in the neighborhood now, you know it very well, and you did live there for many years. So just sort of as a global question, do you have some impression of what the biggest changes in the neighborhood are?
Well, probably beginning with the beginning is the area, probably bounded by, let's say, Ossington, bounded by Ossington and Hoskins, probably Yeah, the beginning of Hoskins.
We're really talking Bathurst.
What is your area?
Bathurst to Spadina, okay. And College to Bloor.
Okay, so not to go below College is really easy, because that was the major slice of Jewish downtown living.
Yeah.
What did that see over this whole stretch?
Yeah, general observations of the changes.
The leaving of, I think, what in sociology they call the area the transitional area, which that was for. Well, it hadn't been so transitional because Jews stayed quite a long time there. All the shuls were on the streets and so on. And the community had almost the institutions, including the JCC, which used to be on Brunswick. On Brunswick, and on the other side of it, on the athletic side on Brunswick, next to the Talmatora.
So that was Brunswick and College.
That was Brunswick and College, so that was important. And that was still there, of course. That was there. And it remained there for a bit. I can't tell you what their history was in terms of when they left. And the social park where kids came and met, and the groups met, and arts and crafts took place on the Brunswick side. On the major side. The flip side of Brunswick, right? Athletics and gym and a swimming pool, if I'm not mistaken, which I never went to. At the still don't go to. And so they decided they were going to wait. They built a new university on that side. So that was where was I? So that was all. That was the heart of the Jewish community: College, Bathurst, Spadina, all the way down and up those streets, and including the major streets.
So you said it was it was transitional.
It was transitional for all immigrant groups.
Yeah.
All sorts of people had been there and stayed a while, and then moved out when there was money to move out, because those houses, which are so attractive now, were not considered so attractive, and they were very inexpensive places to live in, which of course they're not now at all. Any of that, they're attractive, and they've been made.
So you're saying people at that time felt that it was a stepping stone until they had more money and could move into bigger, better, nicer.
Right, and bigger, better, and nicer always meant up the hill, which is what it was called, which means the Davenport Hill, or the old glacial hill that runs. Hump that runs through the city.
Right.
From the receding of the glacier so long ago. Before there were Jews.
Yeah. So it was transitional, and you're saying a lot of the Jewish people moved out. Did you?
Oh, okay, yeah, we're talking about what happened. So Jews began to move out and up the hill, up the hill, gradually upper and more upper.
And what happened to the Harvard Village or that neighborhood? What did you see happen there?
Italians moved in, Portuguese moved in, of course Jews moved in, among the first of the new transitional groups. There were, I don't know if people know, pockets of Irish families throughout that particular, mostly in the upper Robert Street and... that was almost the Robert Street and Harvard Street. A lot of Irish.
And did you observe whether they became integrated with each other? Whether they got along? Were there tensions? What was your observation about that?
The groups?
Yeah.
I would say that it was. Because when the actual cloud of the Jews socially, politically, politically, I know what I'm saying when I say politically, from every point of view was such that they were quite well respected. There were, for example, anti-Semitic pockets or folk who who lived along Harvard, but who were not allowed to vent very much because there were other non-Jews who had, you know, who were very friendly with Jewish people. In terms of where the bakery was, that was a melting pot, so that the Irish families with lots of kids were very. I remember only respect with a few kids who came from further west into the either the school area or for whatever reason along Harvard Street could be quite vocally anti-Semitic, say "Hey Jew boy," that kind of thing. So that was mostly. I think it was an area of mutual respect. I can't remember any one that I grew up with saying, that Ukrainian kid is a shithead or something. And neither did I remember any of them saying, those Jews, they killed our Lord Christ.
It was
peaceful.
Yeah, yeah.
It was peaceful. There was, of course, our time had been perceived by the fight in the big gang warfare in the Christie Pits.
The Christie Pits, right.
But I knew nothing about that.
Yeah. But your day-to-day life, mm-hmm. you knew that this anti-Semitism was there, but...
But in other places.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
On Spadina sometimes I encountered it on the TTC line, the rickety TTC line, which also, of course, disappeared from Harvard Street. So what were the major things for the movement so that people like us, because we had a shop and a going business after it got kick-started, we had no reason to leave. We had a nice apartment, which we inherited from, or bought from the people who had been the bakery.
With your beautiful bathroom.
The beautiful bathroom. And other beautiful rooms with hardwood floors. I mean, there were many symbols of us going up the hill, but staying down.
Yeah, yeah.
The hill. Up the hill, down the hill.
Yeah, yeah.
Have I confused the...
No. I think we're going to move on.
Yeah, let's
okay?
move on, yeah.
Okay, okay. You talked a little bit about the waves of immigration, mm-hmm. because you've already discussed that to some extent. Mm-hmm. What about religion? Different religions and different religious institutions? Any comments about that?
Not so many different ones that I know of. There were Anglican churches, there were United churches, there were lots of synagogues, big and small, pocket size, and very, very grand ones. They were the Grand Reform Synagogue.
But in our neighborhood, yeah.
Oh, that's outside.
Yeah.
Our neighborhood had the Stublach, the little synagogue in homes,
yeah.
the one room reserved for a shul, for a synagogue. And I don't know much about it, except I know there were the beautiful churches which are around. How far west? Spadina? Well, there were the churches already, the big
yeah.
churches of the top of Major, top of Robert.
And then there's one on Spadina, south of Harvard. It's been there for a long time.
Oh, Knox Church, of course.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I think the relationships, such as it was with all these places, was a model of, you know, of cooperation. And I can remember it as very, very comfortable.
Lovely.
Hmm?
Okay.
You may hear differently from others, but
I've interviewed one person so far, and she described it in a very similar way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's African American, and she had a very similar description.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Anything about class structure that you? I could say that to you because you're a sociologist.
I hung around with the Irish kids a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And they would be considered lower working class people, but it was never that meant anything to me, nor was our successful business anything more than a place that they... We were across from probably the pocket of within your area, our area, excuse me, of the lowest class of Anglo-Saxon WASP life community, kids and families who were typically, you could see them in any movie about Ireland or Irish, the Irish poor. This is how they were here. But again, they were, I don't think that's going to help. But they, no one cared about that.
Yeah.
I mean, there may have been some, I'm not saying that all Jewish kids would have gone into their houses, and vice versa, but we had a unique relationship with them. But it wasn't so unique.
So you're saying that ethnicity, religion, socioeconomic class, it was a melting pot in terms of people getting along with each other.
Absolutely.
That was your experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We met at the same grocery shops on the little streets that we lived at.
Yeah.
It was. We went to the same skating rinks and... through the winter.
Anything about languages?
We cheated on the same exams. we helped each other in cheating. I had a gang who protected me from anyone who would tire me for whatever reason, and all I'd have to do was supply them with answers to their questions, their exam questions.
So it was a very harmonious, comfortable place to be.
It really was.
Yeah.
And we still have, we still have coming to the bakery, the grandchildren, the children and the grandchildren of kids that I went to public school to, and they come to the bakery. They're still, but they're, of course, now they're middle class. But I remember them very fondly as kids with torn shirts and all the rest of it. And who knew that this was a synagogue, and who hands off that, and that they could share all sorts of things with us, including their life stories.
Sounds lovely.
Okay. Gan Eden.
Yeah. It still is for me. Gan Eden means the Garden of Eden. Yes. What about employment? I mean, your family had a business, and... But were you familiar with cottage industries, people having little, working at home?
Not really. Cottage industry. Homework?
Yeah, anybody who had little.
I think I heard and went into homes where someone brought home, in that sense, brought home stuff from the factory on Spadina to make a little extra money or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone did a. Mind you, some people had a room in the house that was really for business.
Yeah.
Remember, someone had a room where they just did recordings of that was their business. I guess there were other places that had other businesses.
Yeah. But in no big way that you can recall.
No. I don't think it was like the New York tenement area with that kind of your more romantic cottage industries. You mean sort of really workplaces in a home?
No, I mean more honest. Somebody doing some tailoring at home, right? Kinds
sure.
of small
I
things.
I think they were. But I did. It wasn't a major part of what I. Knew.
Yeah. Any comments about the kinds of schools that were in the neighborhood, and any comments about the kinds of schools that were in the neighborhood then, and what you know about the schools now?
Our school, our public school, is Lansdowne. was not called Lord Lansdowne. They did have no lordly connection. Yeah, I think it was considered a good school. I don't think people really in those days, not of our class, knew a good school from a bad school. Our parents barely spoke English at the beginning. But any school was considered a good school. Any teacher was a good teacher. And if you were good to the teacher, he would be good to you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but I'm sure, I know, you're right about that. Yeah, mm-hmm. The teacher had respect and authority.
Absolutely. And he had a strap to enforce it, too.
Yeah, I remember.
It was kept in the cloakroom, in a black book, or in his desk, or her desk.
That was the same in Montreal, I remember it well. Yeah.
The old times.
And not the good old times, the old times, yeah. Mm-hmm. And what more about the schools, as you remember them then, or you have any observations about current situation in the schools?
Central Tech and Harvard were the schools, the main schools. We're going over to Bathurst now, please. So there was what's the one at the college and before the college in Bathurst? College in Borden, public school, just north of college.
There was a school there?
There still is. It was like another world. It seemed so far away. I don't think it was strange when when people said, "What public school did you go to? What public school are you at?" Lansdowne was obvious, and I could barely remember what that was called. You don't know.
But Central Tech. Can you talk about that? The way it was.
Central Tech had, of course, a very good reputation. Schools had, if you were talking not about public schools, then we can talk about reputations, we can talk about images and who went to them and so on. Central Tech had a bad reputation other than some of its specialty things, which had very good reputations. The people, the kids who went to Central Tech were definitely considered inferior to those who didn't go to a collegiate. It was known. There was often fights and brawls and stuff between kids who went to Central Tech and people who didn't go to Central Tech but went to a collegiate, although I'm not sure that Harvard collegiate kids fought, but there'd be a lot of rivalry in sports and stuff like that. What were you going to say?
Okay, so Central Tech, you're saying, was a different population, say,
absolutely,
from Harvard Collegiate or the school that you, Lansdowne School.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay. So in kind of socioeconomic terms, it was a lower strata.
For sure.
Yeah.
And still is considered so.
Yeah.
And so teachers also are considered inferior to those who teach in at Harvard Collegiate, say. Well, on that subject, Harvard, we talked about all the area and the harmony of the area. there was a lot of harmony in the high school. It was a harmony based on the majority of the students being Jewish and bright, and the minority being the teachers, who often were bright enough to be either neutral or appreciative of the smarts of their students. You know, sort of fill the history books of the country with some of their contributions, many of them. Sammy, go away, boo-boo, go sit down, go sit down. The other slice of the pie were the teachers who were definitely and very faintly veiled anti-Semitic. And couldn't abide the garlic of the kids as they breathed and deliberately exhaled it on them and showered them with it. And said, if there's one thing I hate, it's garlic. And if there's a second thing I hate, it's people who live on garlic.
Wow.
So these things were set up.
Wow.
They had quite free rent to. And there were, I'd say, 5, 6, 7 teachers who were famous for their anti-Semitism, and who were just they were mocked, they were laughed at, and they were sort of There were figures of derision, but they often could do damage and did. So that was a given, that was a constant. The battle between the students and some of the principals, the vice principals, the important subject teachers who were anti-Semitic. Harbor Collegiate was almost, I think, 80% Jewish, so the others were almost never Chinese, as they are now, of course, the majority. But there were some Ukrainian kids who were certainly very bright, and then there were others who were not considered very bright because they were Ukrainian, and that wasn't supposed to be a bright.
So that was some stereotyping you're talking
about. This
was
some stereotyping, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But that was Harvard Collegiate.
That was Harvard Collegiate.
So I think we're going to get off that one because okay. That's not right in our neighborhood.
But I guess most of the kids went to
that's
Harvard,
it.
Of course,
yeah,
so it's
yeah.
Important.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
Ignore that.
So you're talking about the teachers being Anglo-Saxon and the students being Jewish.
Right.
And the majority of the teachers were okay, and there was some small group that were anti-Semites.
Right.
And they found ways of being kind of insidiously anti-Semitic.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, Rafi, we're going to move on a bit. I want to talk about some of the city things, such as traffic, sidewalks, that kind of thing. Have you noticed any changes in the way the traffic moves in the neighborhood?
Oh, absolutely. Now, beginning quite some time ago, but in the last 10 years anyways, the street has become a major artery. And
you're talking about Harvard.
Harvard,
yeah.
You want to know about that?
I mean, yeah, of course. I just wanted to name it.
So that's a big change, to become a major artery. The removal of the streetcar was a kind of a big event, I think.
There was a streetcar on Harvard.
Oh, yes, there was a streetcar on Harvard. I grew up to the clank of the streetcar on Harvard Street.
Oh.
I'm trying to remember what its... I think it was Bathurst. Its extent was Bathurst on the west. And then I think... I don't remember what happened if you wanted to go further west. I guess it was a bus or something. It didn't...
Now there's a bus.
No, yeah. But I don't know.
So there were streetcars on Harvard with streetcar tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my absolutely. God. Yeah, I never saw those. Yeah.
My bedroom was at one point, the window that looked onto Harvard. My bedroom looked onto Harvard. And so I just grew up with that. And it was very natural. So when people talk about noise, the street was fun. I said, you get used to it.
Yeah. Beautiful. That's one of the familiar sounds of home, practically. Yeah. Mm. So you're saying the traffic along Harvard.
And it met and joined and crossed with and made a junction with the north going Bathurst section, and then that took you up to the Vaughan Loop, where you got a bus. So the rest of there was nothing north with streetcars north of there. You went by bus, which was already into the country almost.
Wow.
Virtually. So you weren't too far from the country at Harvard Street.
So you lived in the inner city, but it was pretty much the limits of the city. Just 10 minutes north, the city was rural.
that certainly is we noticed. The big change, of course, most recently, is that Harvard has become the street of fancy restaurants, whereas it used to have a few dives and a few sort of, what are they called? Not that there were trucks out along Harvard, but where you have a good, solid, working-class meal, diner.
Yeah.
So there were diner types of restaurants for goods where you had good grilled cheese sandwiches and hamburgers and stuff like that. There was one big drugstore where the New Royal Bank is. It was across the road on the east side. So that was a huge bar, I remember. Or was that a little bit west of Spadina, east of Spadina? Anyways, that is certainly a major thing. Harvard Bakery made a very big dent in all that you know, that face change of Harvard Street. What else did we have on Harvard Street? Harvard Street had a fish market, which was very lively.
I heard of it. I think I even remember it briefly. Yeah.
It had a fish market that shared that lane. And it was a very important part of the scene. What else was there? Fish market, grocery shops, no such thing as convenience stores.
So it was more working class.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
I mean, the restaurants were, as you say, a good grilled cheese sandwich, whereas now you can go spend $50 on a person.
Oh, yeah, no, it was
and have nice
absolutely
wine.
Absolutely nothing like that.
Yeah,
there was no such thing as wine.
Yeah, yeah. But whatever's going on, Harbor Bakery always fits in.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's become more upper middle class.
Well, Harvard Bakery is the constant in the picture in terms of a business. Peretta's also stayed, and of course, everybody eats pizza. It's classless. The boxes look the same when they're in the garbage, whether wealthy people eat them or not.
Do you see the sidewalks being used in any kind of different way?
not really. Let me think. Am I missing something? There, you know, the association has put pots out here, and there are pots hanging over or stuff. I don't think that makes any major contribution, particularly. I'm not a great lover of that kind of confection or what do you call it? Makeup.
Beautifying.
Cosmetic stuff. I think that the businesses have to generate their own kind of, their
merit.
Own decoration of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it does. It would be unheard of course, to have something like a car jockey to take into your car. I mean, no one came by car. Cars were very few anyways.
But that's interesting, too, that more people coming by car to restaurants now, and before it was for the locals.
Right. Yeah. But now the locals still go, and I think the locals make good use of the local restaurants, and I think that it would be quite a different thing if they depended on foreigners all the time coming in.
Because before, I guess, the locals ate at
least. What are you thinking of when you're talking about things on the sidewalk, for example?
Well, I guess I'm also thinking of, it's interesting what you said about beautifying and people wanting to put flower pots and all that. But I'm thinking also of, on the side streets, how much the sidewalks were used. Like, I'm thinking of maybe children playing outside. I think that there's been a change. I think children play less on the sidewalks than they used to.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no one has put a hopscotch ladder, or whatever you call it. What is it called? Whatever.
Yeah. Well, what? Let me. So once we're talking.
That's
about,
a good point. Yeah.
And what about the lanes? Do you have any sense of whether that has changed?
There's a lot of all sorts of things happening in lanes. People who are drinking in lanes, people who are initiating relationships, and things of that sort. There were carpenter shops with sawdust that went all over the lane. They were cutting through shortcuts. Everyone talked about the shortcut. What shortcut do you use? Do you use this one? Do you use that one to get to school? Oh, no, I go up there, or I don't use any shortcuts because I'm a little afraid of the lane. It's very mucky. The lanes were very mucky. Now they're at least semi-paved or paved in a certain way. They were very old-fashioned. They were very... lively, and people sat, walked through them in the summertime. Kids collected the lilacs, went along, not in cars because they didn't have them, but went along snipping lilacs or climbed the fences of other the homes on Major and Robert Street and so on. And they went and sold these lilacs.
Wow.
On,
so they cut them from other people's trees?
Oh, yeah. And sold them. I remember one of the favorite places to sell them was up at the United Church corner. Because the church people bought them very readily for 10 cents or 15 cents.
That's a new one for me.
True. the lanes were interesting. They were, I think it's appropriate not only for whatever use it's thought now, but they're important to have names, although they didn't, of course, because there was a lot of liveliness of them. And when I think of some things that happened, and I mean, there were not people dressed fancily using them for sure. There were horses. There were. There were wagons. There were real. There were all sorts of
old-fashioned things. What were the horses and wagons doing? What were they carrying?
They were carrying ice, or what were called watermelons. The cry was watermelon, watermelon, watermelons. Get your watermelon. Remember that, and the ice. They were carrying milk. There were still a couple of companies that still had wagons, horse-drawn wagons for their milk. And cheese and stuff. It came in bottles, which was so nice, instead of this horrible, whatever it's called.
The cartons.
The lanes were busy. Kids would stop and chat. Kids would go and see. And I remember one of the games was to have bowler bat.
Yeah.
To take the bowler bat and see if you can go through the whole lane or, with your bowler bat, and there were bets on whether you could or not. People met, kids met kids, and other people met.
So it was a social ground.
It was a bit of a business ground with the lilac trade.
Yeah.
The legal lilac trade. These are the flowers, hey? You know, the lilac flowers.
Yeah.
Kids sold them for a dime.
They'd go pick them from somebody else's tree and then go sell them.
You gotta make a business.
Yeah. any comments about did people have backyards, and those who did they use them?
Absolutely. They'd have flowers and they'd have vegetables, depending on what their talent was. I think a lot of some of the poor Irish would have nothing. They just sort of junkyards for stuff. Boo boo goy. Of course they had backyards. Houses came with backyards.
But my question is how they use the backyards.
Well, that. There we go. How they use them. I don't think they sat it out in them at all. I don't think they had nice fountains or even particularly nice flower gardens in this area anyways. I think mostly they were either junkyards. Sometimes they were since houses had summer kitchens.
Yeah, right.
They would, the summer kitchen had storage, and also sometimes, I can't even see them. There were no barbecues. I saw barbecue or steak until I was, 30 years old or something. It wasn't part of the life.
So it was growing food or just a catch-all?
It was a catch-all, yeah, I think. Yeah. In most cases, the yards were a run-down catch-all. The fences were seemed to be in bad repair. There were not any lovely fences as there are now.
Yeah, so let me just ask.
Or gates or any of those things.
So you're saying that that's really been an area of big change.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are beautiful gardens there
now. I'm sure. Oh, yeah, there are.
Yeah. And I think people probably even sit out there. And as you said, they have barbecues, too. So the backs are used now, and they're beautiful, mm-hmm. I suppose.
Oh, yeah, it's a whole different style. I mean, the gentrification of the whole area continues. And it's interesting to see houses where I had friends, not the Irish friends, but Jewish friends, some of whom even were Orthodox kids and went to the Talmud Torah on Brunswick Street rather than to private little shuls or something where they went for Bar Mitzvah. So some kids were at Talmud Torah and had a very full day education, even after school education, whereas others, I'm talking about Jewish kids, of course. Anyways, these families, the homes of these families, were often more similar. There were two, three I can think of were similar to the Irish, except they were more kempt, and they are now some of the very lovely places on, excuse me, on Brunswick above college, larger houses that were also unkempt, large Jewish houses and kempt ones, and then ones that were sort of somewhere in between, and now have become, of course, palaces. Or beyond anybody's reach in terms of buying them or whatever. But why do I tell this? Because they are visually, they were important then. We call them the big houses or the mansions. Oh yeah, you live in that mansion, almost at College Street, where some of these big things are, and quite beautiful. And now they are again being, they're now wearing new cosmetics and new clothes and new spaces inside, but they, so it's sometimes hard to remember what they did look like and say, well, they looked like, they looked nice, but they didn't look like that, but what did they look like? Well, I'm not sure sometimes, but they sure look, they look proud.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And so they're being restored in a sense to their proudness or their...
They are beautiful. Yeah.
No, you say something.
Okay. I'm just going to ask you one other question in this, and that is the heating of the homes.
Coal mostly, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Coal.
I remember that when I was a child, delivering the coal.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Dirty stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And fireplaces. Not much, yeah.
Never used.
Yeah. Oh, see, I had fireplaces, but it was
No one built that fire for Yoffie, for beauty's sake.
Yeah.
Like that. Made a fire. No, I don't. There might be one real waspy place that I went to, but I don't think anybody made a fire for sitting at the fireplace, even if it was Christmas, everything. Unless they were really very, very Anglo-Saxon. Most of them didn't. I don't think had liners anyways. The whole place would have gone up in fire, I think. They had lit these Victorian fireplaces. Most of them were closed off. They were mantelpieces.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Everybody had a mantelpiece. Even we had a mantelpiece at one point. Where we didn't have it, we built one. It was all bogus.
It was part of the decoration.
Exactly. You could go to a place, yeah, and the fire in it, it finally became an electric thing. They had these little phony fireplaces. You probably had one in Montreal.
No, I never had one, but I certainly have seen them.
And the plastic furniture disappears, of course, eventually.
You mean people putting the plastic on top of their sofas?
Right, and that disappeared. So that I remember my parents saying, well, plastic, goodbye now. We're out of the thing in the fabric. We go and choose fabric like this or something, and it didn't have to have a... Where some of the people who moved up the hill still carried on with plastic furniture, and probably still do.
Well, I remember the plastic, but I also remember that some people had a parlor, and the children were not allowed in there. It was just when company came.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's right, yeah. What about garbage collection? Any memories of what it was like compared to now?
No, I just remember that. I could come back to it. I don't think I can tell you much about that. I don't even think there was garbage collection. There had to be, I guess. What I do remember is milk delivery, with the milk bottles and popping the in the winter and getting the, this much of a cap of frozen milk, and the poor paper cap to it sitting way up there.
Yeah.
So that I remember. So all the verandas had that type of
The milkman.
The milkman.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if the milkman did what he does in the role that he played beyond the milk delivery, whether or not he flirted with the lady of the house. And
all those milkman jokes.
All those milkman jokes. Kevin, what's happened?
You look like the milkman.
That's right. So, Ruffy, and what about any thoughts about...
I can't talk about garbage. I don't remember anything about garbage.
I'm going to change the topic very drastically. any thoughts that you have about when you were 15, younger, older, about dating? What you observed at that time or experienced and what's going on now? Any changes that you see?
Change the subject.
As a denizen of your Harvard area, the girls that I knew were all from my labor Zionist movement. So they almost all of them lived outside of this area. They were Forest Hill or up the hill girls. So. Whatever social niceties they knew were not in the lane ones or that type of thing. They were, they were very civilized and all dictated by movies of the time and the stars of the time and that kind of.
Oh, so they emulated those.
They emulated those. Those were the values. We had my whole life then was shaped by the movement, by the youth movement.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we were also outside the main fashions.
Yeah, and you also did, I guess, a whole lot as a group as opposed to going on a date with somebody, mm-hmm. from what you're describing.
I remember the only dates that I had as such were New Year's when I went out with a group, and it's still a group. Bash, if you want to call.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what dating. I couldn't. It wasn't a subject. We didn't date. At least I didn't, and my friends didn't date as such until we were 40 years old. It was too late to remember what to do. And there was anything went, and there was nothing.
As I was driving here, I was listening to CBC, but I'll tell you about it after the interview. Mm-hmm. You talked about the stores on Harvard, how they were much more for the working class, the restaurants, and any other comments about the stores in general in the neighborhood, including college, including Bloor. Any thoughts about that?
Yes, College Street. Excuse me. So hungry. College Street was a street of delicatessens, as they were called, never delis. I wouldn't have known what a deli was. But of delicatessens based on that kind of brisket and smoked meat and kishkas and also restaurants, Jewish restaurants like Silver's and so on, who mainly catered, I think, well, to the Jewish family, but also to the single Jewish immigrant after the war who managed to live through it and came as a single person to Toronto from wherever they came. That was it. So either the delicatessen or the restaurant, which was not a delicatessen at all, but a full food, usually very delicious food indeed, which we don't have anything left of virtually now, and haven't had for years, and years. Those places were also event places and celebration places, or once a week type places that you celebrated. And I know that many who still remain here miss them and follow them up to Eglinton and some a little further, though. Even there, they're very scarce.
Like United, that went up north.
Yeah, that
yeah,
kind,
yeah,
that kind
yeah.
of thing.
Switzer's, which is closed now, but that also went up north first.
There were also places, very rare places. First of all, you can't minimize the role that Harvard Fish Market played in supplying many of these delis with their smoked fish, which was something they didn't do themselves. So the smoked carp and the smoked whitefish and so on, those were those were very important pegs of the the food culture, which now has spread to supermarkets. We have 15 different kinds of smoked things and so on. And of course, these places did not have cheeses or anything like that. They were strictly meat places, with the odd with the odd vegetarian place.
There were some at that time, or now, you're saying?
Then there was one, one or two.
Because it's
there was United Bakers that was strictly. Yeah. Vegetarian, and I think before the war and through after the Second World War, there were two or three, not Israeli style, but there were places.
Middle Eastern.
But dairy places.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Concentrated on dairy thing. Anyways, Harbert Fish Market and smoked fish were very important, and that became part of the delicatessen scene. That was important, there weren't many Harvard fish markets in the city. And when they closed, they really sort of did close and pulled up all their goodies and tried to do it elsewhere with one or two of the kids of the family. It didn't work. Didn't work at all. And now there are some other people who do that kind of thing in on big scale. But there are places, and I don't want to get lost, as is my wont. There were places like Wilco Appetizer on College Street that pioneered the whole business of fancy foods that are wrapped, that are, fancy foods like smoked oysters and tins and stuff like that, all the vinegars and fancy.
So that started, you're saying, College Street in our area. We're kind of pioneers in terms of
Wilco.
Some of
Wilco was at Borden.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember, because I was very young when I got interested in what my aunt used to call it. What did she call it? Yeah, always the one who likes the internationale Sachen. So, because I tasted all these things before anyone could even spell them.
You are a more worldly person, according to your aunt.
More travel.
So
there was that stuff. What else was there in there? Don't forget also the butcher shops that were at almost all corners.
Kosher butcher shops?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Kosher. If not kosher, then there was an Estonian place just before Bathurst on College. Whose name I just forget now, but I used to like that because I like things like smoked eel, and they were probably the only place in the city where you got smoked eel. And good sour bread.
Butcher shops are really a thing of the past, pretty much. I mean, you get it at your supermarket.
If you go to Church Street, you see the whole stretch of the new healthy butcher shop type of thing, just as you do on Eglinton North.
I think there's one on Bloor Street now.
There are a couple of
Butcher shops in the market, but basically I think most people are buying their meat at the supermarket these days.
Well, but I think there is a trend to both the supermarket butcher shop becoming a little more artisan like and giving you the cuts that you need and advertising how healthy the cows are that they killed to have this lovely steak and stuff like that. So I think it's a little confusing. The traffic is going both ways, I think. One is taking from the other, and the other is gradually disappearing anyways.
Okay, we're going to move on. I want, for our last 10 minutes or so, to talk about the institutions. We talked about churches and synagogues already. Mm-hmm. Healthcare. what existed? What existed?
What existed was in healthcare was carbolic acid. Carbolic acid did all the good helping. But you know, carbolic acid smells like, you know what death smells.
Oh, it smells like hospitals used to smell. Right. Every hospital had that smell.
So what do I know about that? The only thing I know about healthcare is carbolic acid. But I almost never remember what it's called. So this is a first for you, thank you.
But I do remember hospitals having that hospital smell, and that was carbolic acid.
I used to think that was the best thing since sliced bread.
Oh, you love the smell?
Actually, I didn't like sliced bread, but yeah. I liked carbolic acid. I liked carbolic acid. Even in the smell of Band-Aids turned me on.
Should we talk about dating again?
Yeah, nurses.
So carbolic acid, when you think of institutions, you think of that smell of the carbolic acid.
Carbolic acid, I think of, because carbolic acid was what I first smelled when I woke up from the concussion I had when I was taken to Sick Kids Hospital. What do I remember? There was a wonderful place called Sick Kids Hospital that smelled so clean, like laundry, fresh laundry, which we didn't have at all. I mean, I don't know how we did it for anything fresh. I guess my mom washed it.
And hung it outside.
And hung it outside.
Yeah, right. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Oh. Same.
This is all going to be
Never has an interview been carried out with such... And there's such difficult.
Sorry, dog.
We have the to dog tell you. We have to tell who you report to.
That's right. When you say "Sammy, go away," it's not Eleanor. Go away.
You have your respondent. Your respondent did nothing but eat. Either nonstop.
That's a dog.
Anyways, Sick Kids Hospital, very important. Healthcare also meant if you got into a hospital like I did with a concussion when I was 9 years old from falling on the ice, which was on a driveway of Robert Street, a major street, still there and still in our area, your area, that you when you were finished with hospital, which was say a week for my concussion or 10 days, you weren't sent home. You certainly weren't pushed out of the hospital after your 3 days, but you went to Thistletown, which was where the recuperative thing, it was in the country, but right now it's in a horrible part of the city. But Thistletown was the byword for for getting really better. So you got your leg fixed, or your amputation healed, but then you spent another 10 days in Thistletown Hospital.
What a difference to today.
Otherwise, I remember always, because we had an important surgeon in our family, my father's cousin. So what was medicine? Medicine was the numerous clauses that didn't allow Jews to go to into the profession. And medicine was... our family doctor, our pediatrician, who was about this high, Silverberg, Silverstein, and classes, and looked like some kind of a gnome. And I certainly can't see any hospital letting him come in. But anyways, he had diagnosed Roz with a stomach flu because she didn't get out of bed and she was looking horrible and moaning. And it happened that our cousin just came in to say a good Happy New Year or something. And he had a very close relationship with him, and he took one look at Roz in this horrible slum which we lived, which was next to the Puritan Laundry, which was right at the top of Brunswick, just below Bloor. And it's now the club, the Transact Club.
Oh, my God. So you lived there?
We lived there. That was one of our places that we lived in. And so he drove one of the few people in our families who had a car to say hello. And he said, let's get her into my car. She doesn't have long to live. So she had a ruptured appendix. So ruptured appendix is what I know about in medicine, of course. That our doctor saved her life. So I'm always interested in hearing about ruptured appendix stories and whether or not who are the actors, the characters in that. Otherwise, I don't remember. The Women's College Hospital was there across from Eaton's College, and I always remember wondering, what does it mean,
Women's College Hospital was where?
Oh, I think where they were.
Or where they are now.
Yeah.
Okay. But anything in our neighborhood?
There was the hospice, or what do you want to call it? There was the nunnery, which is now, of course, the Rosedale home at the bottom of Brunswick. What's that called?
Kensington Gardens.
Kensington, not Rosedale. Kensington Gardens.
So that was there were nuns there being trained there or living there?
Living there, but in the front, of course. Yeah. Eventually, when some of that was demolished, and the doctor's hospital became
right.
Part of the same.
But first, there were nuns living there, mm-hmm. being trained there or mm-hmm. living there.
I think, so. Well, certainly on the major street.
Yeah, right. Okay. Oh, that's something I had never even heard of.
What else?
Wow.
TGH was a big hospital, but it was not for us. And nobody that I knew ever. Mount Sinai, from the tiny little Mount Sinai in Yorkdale, Yorkville, where it began, the Jewish home. Jewish Home and Hospital, or whatever it was called. No, it was called Mount Sinai, what kind of?
Yeah.
It's called Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
Yorkville. Was nothing that we knew. We knew of it, and we knew the building. We knew that Palmerston Boulevard was the doctor's hospital, the doctor's street.
So there were doctors' offices on Palmerston.
We never used them in them, that they originally were built to attract Jewish doctors, built almost exclusively, and did, and were very successful, so that the whole stretch below Bloor was mainly wealthy doctors, uh-huh. or very well-off yeah. doctors.
So who did the people in your neighborhood between Spadina and Bathurst, who were their family doctors, or who were their...
The family doctor visited.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a big change.
You didn't go to the hospital to see your family doctor.
Right, of course.
But I understand now it's changing. So there's a bit of a reverting to that, that doctors are now going to homes.
Minimum.
Not in by the drawing.
Yeah, Okay, we're going to move on from that. Just one more thing about institutions or areas. Kensington Market, which is south of us, mm-hmm. but did you feel that it had any influence on us from college up to Bloor?
Oh, yes.
What kind of?
Big shop there. People went for their fish there. People went for their dill pickles and their... A lot of shopping.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
their schmutters, for their, all sorts of things.
And are there any changes that you're aware of?
By the way, we should also mention since we did the butchers, the poultry people at the Tenenbaums on Brunswick, who were a big fixture of the place, and Feld's Drugs, which was a filthy place, but it sold drugs. And maybe to teenagers, I'm not sure. It was a drugstore, right just where I think where the pottery.
Okay.
Just above where the potters are.
So it's the northwest corner of Brunswick. Yeah. And
by
Harvard.
The way, we also lived in a slumish, in another house, which is the first of the two, three renovated houses above Harvard on Brunswick. There we lived on the ground floor, flat, and very poor, again, without a stick of furniture. And that would be right directly across from Feld's Drugs, but you know where it's virtually the backyard of the nice place. What is it called? Dessert Trends,
mm-hmm.
right next to Dessert Trends,
yeah.
just north. There's a house attached.
Did you live in three different... You lived above the store, and then you lived near Transac, and then you lived near Dessert Trends.
We lived in Transac, if you want to call that. I think it's 171 Brunswick. Before we lived on Harvard.
Okay. So Harvard was a step up for you.
Harvard was an improvement. Was a big step up. It was a gigantic step for mankind.
And for the Kossower family.
The Kossower family.
Okay. And then you moved to near where Dessert Trends is.
Right.
So you didn't live above the store anymore.
No, we went from Upper Brunswick, to Lower Brunswick.
Okay.
To
above the store.
Above the store.
And then your parents lived there until your father could no longer negotiate the stairs.
Right. Let's see if we can figure that out. I'll give that to you.
We don't need the specifics. Okay. Just two other general areas, because we've been talking for a long time. The community.
Okay.
I wanted to
ask. I'm eating.
Yeah. the livability and the security of the neighborhood.
I think, though one would think not, I think people felt much more secure in those days about. You know, whether you lock a door or not, than they do now. I know a lot of my friends' families never even thought to lock the door or lock the car, but once they had cars, although I guess there was a period where they sure did lock them. I don't remember any kind of crime in the area at all. I don't remember police cars, I don't remember ambulances even. I don't remember any of that kind of stuff happening. What about security? I think there was a stretch where it was not safe, to be in the store late alone. My mother would once have people barge in. Lights were almost all out and so on, if not for the Peretta kids the kids who, what was the family whose house you lived in? Was the kid who was now a grown man who you paid
Johnny Fuda.
The Fuda, right?
Yeah.
Where Fuda saved the day.
People
were holding her with a gun or something.
Really?
So there was a time.
So she was held up?
Yeah.
And Fuda, somebody...
Yeah, I forget. Yeah, he came home and he was part of the story.
Yeah.
I was off at school, I think, in New York at the time. So there was time when there was time when Harper Street, I think, was very rough. It became a real street of a lot of holdups, several times for where the Japanese sushi place is now.
But so when you're talking about when it was rough, are you talking about current, more like 10 years ago?
No, not 10 years. I'm talking about maybe 15, 20 years.
Okay.
There wasn't a good place to be. But clearly, Sam has been getting. I'd have to check that.
And do you think it's safer again now?
I think so.
You know, I used to walk along Bloor Street, along Harvard, every Sunday morning with Alan Borovoy, and we saw a lot of the windows smashed in on Sunday mornings. Mm. We would often see them at just around that time, like 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah,
the stores on it.
We had perhaps more recent all of the flower pots broken and stuff like that and all sorts of desecration of things.
But it seems no longer to be a
place. I think there's so many other good places to hit now.
Okay, just our last category is I want to talk about historical. Events.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a list of three here, but we're talking about fighting the Spadina Expressway. Did that make any impression on you?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you remember it?
For sure. It was a big movement, I remember. It had a lot of clout to it. It did finally halt it did work finally. I think I was busy with other causes at the time, so it didn't really interest me a great deal.
Well, you were probably on your way out by that time, too. like maybe in New York by that time. Anyway, but you remember it, and they stopped it. They were successful at stopping it.
Well, that was Jane. I was going to say Jane Russell.
Jane Jacobs.
Jane Jacobs.
Yeah.
I felt that was not my battle.
What about Rochdale and the student activism of the 60s?
Absolutely, very, very. Very loud, very imitative of, say, what had happened at Columbia University just before that. students holding, this, you know, the system and the schools, the universities to ransom. I hated Rochdale with a passion because it was dirty. It was dirty inside. It was dirty outside. It was. A continuous battle to prevent kids from jumping and killing themselves out of the windows. I didn't like the whole ideology of Rochdale, and it was a big and it was a hideous building. When they put up that hideous sculpture, so-called sculpture, I hated it even more. I hate it to this day every time I go by.
It is a very unattractive building. I think it's a seniors' building now or something. I'm not sure.
I'd help the seniors. I'm sure it is.
And in terms of historical events, the end of World War II.
I remember very vividly the end of World War II. I was on Brewer Street between Bathurst and Brunswick and Borden, just where the movie house is still. The same movie has
been. Bloor Cinema.
Well, yeah. It wasn't the Bloor Cinema then. The Bloor Cinema was across from it where all the kids wait in line for these shows or whatever, and it's all got all this graffiti on it. I forget what that is. I wouldn't know. That was the Bloor Cinema, and the other was called the Midtown Cinema. It was run by a Jewish family as part of the. Four or five theater, or maybe six, seven theater franchise. And so that there was the rich part of our family that was in the movie business. Uncle Sam was the one who brought my mom over, and he was the owner of this whole circuit of movie theaters.
Oh, wow.
So why do I remember it, to your question? Because the crowd began pouring out towards it and from it, saying, hey, the war's over, the war's over. And the war, below the few cars that were here, the 12 cars that were in the city of Toronto at the time, were blowing horns. And so I don't know where I was coming from. I know I was going home. And it was the day on which my parents signed the accepted offer for the bakery.
Wow.
Exactly.
So two big things happened that day in your life.
So I won't forget it. But of course, it was a sad day because it was on that day that people finally made their, not peace, they couldn't do that, but made their acceptance of the reality of the fact that they were sisters and brothers and stuff. So
It
went up in smoke.
Yeah. So it was nice that the war was over, but their losses were
it was terrible.
Of course. Yeah.
Because the response, you know, what did I know? At the time, I was 11, 12, no, or something like that. No, 9. Yeah, the response of the rock music is fine and dandy, but so what?
Okay, Ruffy, we're going to end this right now. I want to thank you very, very much. Appreciated.
It's good. I'm sorry I have no voice today.
At this time, the recorder was turned off. Then it was turned on again a few minutes later for a few final remarks.
Okay, so Ruffy, you want to just kind of...
If I can find some voice, a voice to cap for this, this very nice talk with you. I'd like to say that in the course of the many years that I've been at the bakery, after doing many other things that were very interesting, none of those seemed as interesting as being in the heart of an area that was so exciting and so interesting to grow up in, and the kind of thing that makes novels and so on in Montreal, and some in Toronto too. All the people that I meet in the bakery are with one voice, positive and excited to have grown up in this quadrant of the city, in this part of the city, and feel very connected to it still. Bring their kids and their kids' kids down to see on their own and with their own eyes what a lovely place this is, and feel very attached to their growing up stories, which they then share as they're munching on a croissant or whatever. Remember the good growing up times, even some that were scary, but otherwise part of the good life, though we were far from good, well off financially, economically in those days. So it's been a good ride.
That's it. Thank you. I'm glad you had time to think.